Sattva Sri Srimad's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Guravana Pichoni Nir Vishesha Sanyavari Paskya Chade Satarni Oma Ginatu Medandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Jaina Tasmai Sri Guravay Namaha Vanshakopa Turubhishtha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So, very nice to be here today. This will be the last day, at least for our journey this time at the Juhu Temple, talking about the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada in the 1970s. So today, wanted to start out, if for those of you who have been here the last few days, you know that the very first service I had to Prabhupada, this was even before I was serving him personally, this is when I went to New Dwarka, I talked about reading Krishna book. So this was a very wonderful thing when you think that every evening Prabhupada would sit in his garden and he would listen to Krishna book. And this was a book that had just come out. This was volume one, volume two. They were only out for 1 or 2 years. Prabhupada had produced the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of Krishna book. So, as I was saying, how wonderful it was to be able to read this to Prabhupada. So now, it was just 4 months later when I became Prabhupada's servant. And over the next 2.5 years, I would go in and out of Prabhupada's room every day, so many times each day, when he would ring his bell. And sometimes I would go into his room and Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk and he was reading his books. He would be reading Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes you would go into his room and he would be doing bhajan. So all these things that Prabhupada requested us to do, he was doing it. He was reading his books. He was reading Bhagavad Gita. And as soon as you saw Prabhupada reading, you just saw a devotee reading Prabhupada's books. You never got the idea that Prabhupada was looking at them in some critical manner, that he was looking for mistakes or trying to see if they were edited properly. He was relishing these books. He would sit and he would read them for hours sometimes. Not only was he translating in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, but then later on in the day, he would be reading these same books that he had translated into English, and he would read them. You never thought, well, Prabhupada had written these books. When you saw him reading them, you would never get that idea. He was just reading these books as we did. So one of those days, I went into Prabhupada's room, and he was behind his desk, and he had his glasses on, and he was reading Bhagavad Gita. I went in, and I offered obeisances, and I sat up right in front of Prabhupada, right in front of his desk. And he looked at me, and as soon as I sat up, he said, "This book is so nice." And Prabhupada was relishing reading the Bhagavad Gita as it is. He said, "This book is so nice," he said. "If you just read," he said, "this one book," he said, "you can be Krishna conscious." He said, "You don't have to read dozens and dozens of books." He said, "If you just read this one book, you can be Krishna conscious." He said, "It's so nice, this book." So I was just 21-year-old and devotee for just 1.5 years. So he was encouraging me. But Prabhupada was filled with so much emotion reading this book. So I said, "Yes, Prabhupada," and then I went about and left the room. So now so many months went by, and I'm seeing Prabhupada, he's reading, like I said, he's reading his books at different times, he's chanting japa. Everywhere I go, Prabhupada's doing these things. So then another afternoon comes, and Prabhupada rings the bell, and I go into the room and offer obeisances, and he's sitting behind his desk again, and he's reading Nectar of Devotion. So I sit up, and he looks at me, and again, he's just looking right at me, and he said, this book, he said, is so nice. He said, this Nectar of Devotion, he said, it's so nice. He said, if you just read this book, he said, you can become Krishna conscious. He said, just this one book. He said, you don't have to read so many different books. He said, this is all you need. He said, if you read this, you can become Krishna conscious. So I just kept getting, I said, yes, Prabhupada. And then he just put his eyes down and he just kept reading. So then I left. So now I was with him 2 years. Over 2 years. So another time, I go into Prabhupada's room, and he's sitting behind his desk in another city, and he's reading Krishna book. And I offer obeisances, and I sit up. And he looks at me so seriously. And you know what he said? Sure you do. He said, if you just read this one book, he said, you can become Krishna conscious. He said the same thing. He said, just this book. This was another book. He said, if you just read this book, he said, you can be Krishna conscious. He said, you don't need anything else. He said, just read this book. He said, it's so nice. Prabhupada was filled in ecstasy reading these books that he gave to us. And he was reading them, and he was ecstatic. So then I'm still sitting there, and he just kept looking at me. And then he said, you don't even have to read the whole book. He said, if you just read one chapter, he said, of this book, he said, you just read one chapter, he said, you can be Krishna conscious. And I'm sitting, I'm just nodding my head. And then he just kept looking. And he said, you don't even have to read the whole chapter. He said, just this page, if you just read one page of this book, he said, you can be Krishna conscious. He said, it's such a wonderful book. He said, just a page. And I'm just sitting there. He didn't tell me to go, so I'm sitting. And he's just looking at me. And he said, you don't even have to read the whole page. He said, if you just read one line of this book, he said, you can be Krishna conscious. So now I'm like, yes, Prabhupada. And he's still looking at me. And then do you know what he said? Yes. He said, not even the whole line, just one word. He said, if you read one word from this book, you can be Krishna conscious. He said, because Krishna is in every word. Yeah. So this is what Prabhupada gave us. Prabhupada was in ecstasy reading his, he would read these books and he was just Krishna. And that's what he gave us. This was Prabhupada's main service, wasn't it? His Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, what did he tell him? You print books in English and you distribute them in the West. So this was always Prabhupada's main service. And every day, Prabhupada would translate. Every morning when we were all sleeping, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada would be sitting behind that same desk and he would be translating Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Every day he did it. And we know he produced 80 books in the course of that time. Because this was his service to his Guru Maharaj. So this was Prabhupada's life and soul. But then he would read those books. Once in the airplane, as I said, Prabhupada always sat by the window and Prajumna and I were sitting next to him. And Prabhupada was reading his Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he was just reading it. And he turned and he said to Prajumna, "Do you know any author?" He said, "That reads his own books." He said, "Once he's written a book," he said, "Do you know anyone that will read his own books?" And we were going, he said, "No." He said, "They don't read their books." He said, "They read other people's books." He says, "Once they've written it," he said, "finished." He said, "But here," he said, "here I am." He said, "I'm reading this Bhagavad Gita as it is." "Why?" So he asked, "Why? Why?" Yes, he said, "These are not my words. They're Krishna's words." Right? So this is the importance, The pure devotee of Krishna comes in the disciplic succession. Doesn't change anything. Doesn't add anything, give his own interpretation. These are the things Prabhupada would always condemn. But just as Krishna has given it, Prabhupada's delivered it through the disciplic succession. So it's Krishna. It's non-different from Krishna. So many temples now, when I travel, I go to, and they'll have Prabhupada's books on the altar. They'll have a set of Bhagavatams right there by the deities. It's Krishna. Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada, what was he? Person Bhagavatam. This is why we can sit and talk about Srila Prabhupada. In the third canto, it's described describing these activities of the pure devotee is the most potent way for us to become Krishna conscious. This is our process to become Krishna conscious, by serving the pure devotee, by hearing of his activities. And this is what the Bhagavatam is filled with, the activities of Krishna's devotees. So Krishna becomes more pleased when we sit and listen to these activities. And look at Srila Prabhupada's activities. He printed all these books for everyone all over the world. I always say he traveled everywhere he went. Prabhupada purified that place. So these books are so important, Not just to distribute, but ourselves to read. Prabhupada would say, we also have to read. So me, he always encouraged to read, even one page, one chapter of these books. So that's for all of us. We can become Krishna conscious. Just read Prabhupada's books, chant Hare Krishna, and everything will happen. So I wanted to tell, we'll go to Vrindavan for a little bit, a few memories in Vrindavan, because we just have a little time left. And then we'll see what happens from there. But as I said, I became Prabhupada's servant right at Janmashtami of 1972. And within 1 month, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan for Kartik. And he spent the entire month of Kartik in Vrindavan. And he hadn't done that after that was the last time Prabhupada spent the whole month of Kartik. And he was very excited to go to Vrindavan. From the time I became his servant, Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan, then he started traveling west, and he was headed to Delhi and Vrindavan. And this was going to be the first big festival with his disciples in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar. He said there would be some 50, 60 disciples of Prabhupada. And of course, they were all from the west. These were all his American and European Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada was, as I said, he was very proud of his disciples. He was very proud of the devotees. And he was very eager to go there. And he said to me when we were traveling on the plane, and he said he was making his plans. And he said, so when we get to Vrindavan, he said, we'll stay at Radha Damodar Temple. He said, and every day, he said, I'll give class at the by the Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, in the courtyard, he said, every afternoon, he said, I'll give class from the Nectar of Devotion. He said, and you can read from the book. He said, and then I'll stop you, he said, and give some commentary. So he had it all. He was envisioning. Prabhupada had his vision of what was going to happen. He said, and I'm speaking to my Western disciples, he said, and I'll be speaking in English. He said, others may be there, come and attend, he said. But he said, the classes I'm giving in English to my Western disciples. Because Prabhupada was going back after leaving there in 1965. And who there? No one there thought Prabhupada was going to be successful in his mission in America. He was going to go to New York. And they thought after 1 year, Prabhupada would come back, and again he'd stay in his rooms and do his bhajan. This was Prabhupada's bhajan when he left. This is what he wanted to do. When Prabhupada stayed in Vrindavan, it wasn't just to meditate, read books, chant Hare Krishna. His whole plan was just seeing Srila Rupa Goswami and taking inspiration from him to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So now 7 years had gone by, and Prabhupada was returning to his same rooms. You know, he was gone for a long time, so now he was returning to these rooms, and he had accomplished this mission for his spiritual master. He had disciples from all around the world now that were assembling in Vrindavan. So he was very excited. And he would tell, you listen to these classes, and you can see how Prabhupada would emphasize that these were first-class Vaishnavas. He didn't mind showing them to anyone, that these were from the West. They were not real Vaishnavas. No, they were Vaishnavas. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, they had become Vaishnavas. So Prabhupada, and in this way, all of his disciples, we were very happy because we knew Prabhupada saw us in that way. And he would do that, of course. He would tell everyone how wonderful we were. And then when we were in his room with him, he would tell us how nonsense we were. So he was always encouraging us. He would keep us humble, break that false ego. But to everyone, he would always praise his Western disciples, especially when he would go to Vrindavan. Like a Krishna Balaram, when he would say, you know, my disciple, he wouldn't leave me even for $1 million. And he would say, would you leave Shrutakirti for $1 million? And, no, Prabhupada. He said, yes, not even for $1 million. So he wanted to show all these people in India that in the West they had everything, but they gave it up for Krishna. Because he saw in India they were struggling so hard, right? When he first went to America, what was his idea? He was writing his godbrother saying, give me one brahmachari. And when he was in India, he would tell them, the men and their wives, give me one boy. You have so many sons. Give me one son. You have so many sons. They're all devotees. You've given all your sons. So he would say, just give me one of your sons and I'll make him a first-class brahmachari. They said, oh, Swamiji, we can't give up our sons. They have to become big, you know, big successful. So that's what they wanted, become big successful devotees. Or big successful in the material world. So Prabhupada brought these Westerners back to India to show them. This is what America, they've already had all the success in the world. And they're giving it up to become devotees. So he always liked to show, they would not leave me. For even $1 million, they wouldn't leave. And we wouldn't leave Prabhupada for anything. So when I arrived in Vrindavan, of course, for me, it was amazing. I had never left America. And within 1 month, I became Prabhupada's servant. And I don't even know how it happened. I never saw any airline tickets. I never saw my passport. Everything was just happening by Krishna's arrangement, by Shyama Sundar, Prabhupada's secretary. That was his job. He arranged all the flying, all the business end, all the mail. And I was just cooking and massaging Prabhupada. That's what I did, and responded to his bell. So I never saw my passport. I never saw airline tickets. But everything was happening. Prabhupada would say that. When you live with the king, you live on the same level as the king, how you eat the same food. And that's what I was doing. I was eating Prabhupada's remnants. I was flying, sitting next to him on the airplane, just because I was servant of the king. So now I'm in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple. And, of course, as soon as Prabhupada arrived, there was this big fanfare. I think it was in the afternoon or maybe late morning. And he came in into the temple area. It was like this. And came up. It was much smaller before the deities. And the deity doors were closed. And at that time it was Gura Chand. He was the Goswami in charge. Now it's his grandson, I guess. His grandson is now the Goswami. But this was Gura Chand. He had these big, thick glasses and he was a bit of a character. So Prabhupada came and they, with great ringing the bells, and they opened the doors and got to see Radha Damodar. And I saw it for the first time. And Prabhupada offered obeisances and we all offered obeisances and they're ringing the bells. And then they closed the doors and we're standing there. And then again they opened the doors and then they had Govardhan, huh? They keep there. So then again we offered our obeisances. And so it was very exciting, and Prabhupada had come back. And now Prabhupada, he was the hero in Vrindavan. He had spread Krishna consciousness. Now there were Krishna devotees everywhere in the world by Prabhupada's work. So the very first day, I'm just getting used to my new environment there in Vrindavan Dham, Radha Damodar Temple. And Prabhupada described it. He said at this time, while he was there for that month, he said, Radha Damodar Temple, he said, is such a special place. He said, in my rooms, of course he said his rooms, Prabhupada said they were very special. He said, these rooms at Radha Damodar Temple, he said, are the hub of the wheel of the spiritual universe. He called it the very center. He said, these rooms, he said, in Radha Damodar Temple, are the center of the spiritual world. That's how he described. He said, because it is at this place where this Krishna consciousness movement has begun. He said, by Srila Rupa Goswami. He didn't say by him. He said, but Srila Rupa Goswami, he has started this Krishna consciousness movement right here at Radha Damodar Temple. He said, so it's the very center of the spiritual world. Such a special place. So now, for the next month, Prabhupada stayed there, and we got to stay there with Prabhupada. And the first thing that changed for me was, now every day I'm cooking for Prabhupada, using his cooker as we travel around the world, Chicago, Los Angeles, he stopped in Thailand, and everywhere, every day I'm cooking in the cooker. So now we get to Vrindavan, and of course, Prabhupada's room is on one side, and then there's the veranda, and then Prabhupada's kitchen. So I go into the kitchen, and Jamuna's in there, and she's saying, of course, she's cooking for Prabhupada. Prabhupada taught her how to cook. She was expert. So I didn't have to cook for Prabhupada. And this was the first day. So I massaged Prabhupada, and then he bathed, and he would dress, and chant Gayatri, put on his tilak, chant Gayatri, and I'm just sitting on the veranda chanting, because this was my most active time. While Prabhupada was getting dressed and bathing, I was taking the cooker apart and chaunting everything and rolling chapatis and making his plate, and now I had nothing at all to do. So I'm just sitting on the veranda chanting. So Prabhupada finished his Gayatri and he got up. This is October 15th, the first day of Kartik. And he got up and he walked across. I offered obeisances and he went into his kitchen. Just a very little room. And he sat down. That place he would sit, you could see Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And that's where he did his translation work and that's where he would take prasadam. So he went in there. So I'm just chanting japa on the veranda. And I didn't know what to do because I wasn't cooking all of a sudden. So I got up and I thought, I'll walk into the room where Prabhupada was. I just wanted to look inside. So it was a screen door, so I just opened it up and I look inside, and Prabhupada was sitting in the corner and his plate is in front of him and he's taking prasadam. So as soon as I opened the door, he looked over and then he saw me and he said, "Oh," he said, "have you taken prasadam?" I said, "No, Prabhupada." I said, "I'll take with the devotees when you're finished." He said, "No, no." He said, "Come in." He said, "Come sit down, take prasadam." I said, "No, Prabhupada, I can't take with you." Prabhupada always ate alone, never ate with anybody. Only when he went out to life member's house, he would take some prasadam, and the devotees would be with him. But he always ate alone, Prabhupada. He would sit very quietly and just honor prasadam. But then he kept saying, "No," he said, "sit down." He said, "Come take prasadam." So after the third time, finally I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So I sat down right beside Prabhupada, Radha Damodar Temple, in the center of the whole universe. And I was sitting next to my spiritual master on the very first day of Kartik, my very first day in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada allowed me to take prasadam with him. So now Jamuna, she was very efficient. She just had a little bucket stove with some coal and cow dung on the top. Now she's making chapatis. So very quickly she set me a place and put a thali down and katuris and little beautiful looking sabjis, rice dal, and puts one chapati there. And then she would go back and she's rolling. So now she's bringing Prabhupada hot chapatis and she's bringing me hot chapatis. And I started eating. And I realized I had never tasted anything like this in my whole life. And I knew I didn't cook anything like this. This was so good. So I'm in Vrindavan with Prabhupada eating this most relishable prasadam. So I was eating and eating. I don't know how much I ate. I didn't even know how fortunate I was being in this situation with Prabhupada. It was the only time I ever sat with Prabhupada. Anyone sat with Prabhupada and took prasadam like that. So I'm just enjoying so much this very tasty sabjis and dal. And so this went on for the next 15 minutes in Jamuna. She's very expertly serving both of us. So then I finished, and Prabhupada was finished. And Jamuna, right away, she's taking the plates. And so Prabhupada looked at me, and he said, "Did you like the prasadam?" I said, "Oh, yes, Prabhupada." I said, "Very nice." He said, "Very much." He said, "Very good." He said, "So she has cooked for you today." He said, "Tomorrow you cook for her." And he smiled. And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So, of course, Jamuna wouldn't let me cook for her. And she wouldn't have liked what I cooked so much anyway, I don't think. It wasn't like what she was cooking. But Prabhupada made that point. She was my god sister. Because he would say, in these times, in the 70s, we addressed everyone as Prabhu, or god sisters, or god brothers. Prabhupada trained us. We always called each other Prabhu. And he said, Prabhu means master. So how do you serve your master? Or how do you let your master? He's your master, and you're taking service from them. So he said, tomorrow you must serve her, because she had served me that day. And we said, just like we say, Prabhu, go get me the telephone. Prabhu, go do this. So we call them master, and then we say, go do this for me, go do that for me. So we said, this is not Vaishnava. He said, we always offer service. So he gave me that instruction. But he allowed me to take prasadam with him that day. So it was very wonderful. And Jamuna, of course, her cooking was... couldn't be compared with anything I had had at that time. Nothing compared. It was so good. So each day, Prabhupada would give class. And there would be 50, 60 devotees, his disciples there. And you wouldn't see him all through the day because there was no guest house at this time. Prabhupada hadn't built a guest house. And this was also the very first thing Prabhupada did in Mayapur, in Vrindavan. He didn't build temples, right? He built housing for his disciples. He said because he knew Westerners, they were very much attached to comfortable situation. So he didn't want them to unnecessarily have so many difficult austerities. He wanted them to have a nice facility. So immediately he would build guest houses. But here at Radha Damodar, the devotees were staying at Keshigat Palace and Fogala Ashram. They would just have to find their way. And there was no prasadam time where everyone sat down. This was like the first festival in Vrindavan. So they were on their own. So you didn't see them very much because they were just trying to stay healthy. It's in the beginning, we didn't, you know, we were a little reckless, especially like in Vrindavan, you would go out and you would buy your milk sweets and your rubbery and, you know, you could get a whole plate. You know, you get your lunch plate. It was like 3 rupees for a lunch in Vrindavan, all the chapatis you could eat. So, and we ate, you know, and then we would get sick. So everybody's business was how to stay healthy. So during the day, you didn't see the devotees. You would see them for classes. But one day, Prabhupada looked out of his room, and there was one devotee, big, tall devotee, and he was walking around in the temple, and he was chanting japa. And Prabhupada said, "Who is that devotee?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know, Prabhupada." I said, "Should I bring him?" He said, "Yes, let him come in." So we came into Prabhupada's room, Radha Damodar, offered obeisances, and he sat down. And Prabhupada said, "Where have you come from?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "my godbrother and I," he said, "we were in South India, and we were preaching in South India," he said, "and distributing books." He was a brahmachari. He was 19 years old, a very young boy. And he said, Prabhupada said, "Well," he said, "after this festival," he said, "what are you going to do?" This was unusual. He wasn't in any temple. Like everyone that came, we all belonged to a temple in those days. No one was independent. No one just traveled around. And like now you have brahmacharis, they travel around the world and they have their tickets and they do a little collecting and book distribution and they give some to the temple and they keep some in their pocket. And this was, no one had any money. Grahasthas had no money. Brahmacharis had no money. We just had Prabhupada. So this boy was independent. So Prabhupada said, "Well, what are you doing next?" And he said, "We're thinking we'll go to Vietnam to preach." And Prabhupada's eyes became big. And he said, "Acha?" He said, "Vietnam?" He said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So Vietnam was like Iraq is now. In 1972, there was this big war. The Americans were bombing everywhere and people were getting killed every day. So many thousands of people were dying and it was a horrible war. So Prabhupada knew this and he became very happy to see that he was ready to go to Vietnam to preach Lord Chaitanya's mission. And Prabhupada looked and he said, "Perhaps you should take sannyas." This is a 19-year-old boy, been a devotee for just over a year. And he became surprised. And he said, and Prabhupada saw and he said, "Well," he said, "what you should do," he said, "is you go," he said, "to the samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami," he said, "and you chant there your japa." He said, "and you ask him a question about your taking sannyas." And Prabhupada gave him a question. He said, "then come back here and tell me what he said." So he did that, and he went. And then Prabhupada told him to go to Krishnadas Kaviraja's samadhi, and he gave him a question to ask him. So every day, he sent him to different samadhis around Vrindavan and gave him different questions. And the devotee, my godbrother, Jai, he would come back and he said, "so we would chant there in front of the samadhis," he said, "but," he said, "I didn't hear him talking to me," he said, "but we would think of an answer to give Prabhupada that we thought, you know, he would say that they were inspired." So they became inspired and they would say, you know, "well, this was the answer and this was the answer." So after 5-6 days of this, Prabhupada said, "okay," he said, "you'll take sannyas." And he said, "we'll have this ceremony," he said, "this fire jagya right here,
place.
Radha Damodar Temple in the courtyard, he said, by Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi. He said, and it will be on the night of Rasa Leela, the full moon night of Rasa Leela, Rasa Yatra evening. He said, we'll have this initiation ceremony. He said, so you tell my secretary, Shyamasundar, to take you to Lohi Bazaar and get you your cloth and your bamboo for Danda. So he said, yes, Prabhupada. So of course he left the room and he right away looked for Shyamasundar. So he found Shyamasundar and he said, you have to take me to Lohi Bazaar. He said, Prabhupada's giving us sannyas. And Shyamasundar looked at him. He said, you're not getting sannyas. He said, Prabhupada didn't say anything to me. He was Prabhupada's secretary, so he always knew what was going on, or at least he thought he did. And he said, no, Prabhupada said, I'm getting sannyas. He said, on Rasa Yatra night, he said, I'm getting sannyas. He said, no, he said, you're not getting. He said, ask Prabhupada. He said, he told me, he said, we're getting sannyas. He said, I'm going to, he said. So he went, and he said, Prabhupada, are these boys getting sannyas? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, with the others, I think it was Satsarup and so many devotees took sannyas at night in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple. So then the other devotees started to hear about these two young boys getting sannyas. And some of them, they weren't very happy because they had been devotees for 3 years, 5 years, some of them, 6 years. And here these devotees, they were teenagers. And they've been devotees for just 1-2 years. And one of them was saying, they don't even know any shlokas. He said, they can't even chant shlokas. He said, how are they getting sannyas? They don't even know how to preach. How can they get sannyas? So there was this big controversy was going on about these devotees Prabhupada had said could get sannyas. But anyway, Prabhupada, of course, he prevailed. And they took sannyas that night, Rasa Leela night in the courtyard of Srila Rupa Goswami, and they became Paramahamsa Swami and Parabhajakacharya Maharaj. And after the ceremony, Prabhupada was talking to Paramahamsa. He was 19, he was the youngest devotee ever to take sannyas in ISKCON that night. He was 19 years old. And Prabhupada told him that the ceremony that Narada Muni attended, and he said Srila Rupa Goswami also personally attended the ceremony and the fire sacrifice. He said it was such a nice fire sacrifice. So he, later on, him and I, we became very good friends. He became Prabhupada's secretary, and we traveled around the world with Srila Prabhupada. He was like the same age as me. He was a little bit younger. He was actually, even I was young to be with Prabhupada, and he was younger. So he became Prabhupada's secretary, this Paramahamsa Swami. And we have very nice times together. I just saw him in part of this trip. I stopped in San Francisco. He now lives north of San Francisco. He drove for 6 hours. I was only there overnight, and he drove for 6 hours, and we talked for 5 or 6 hours, Vaisheshika's house, our godbrother. He's one of Prabhupada's wonderful book distributors. He's one of 2 or 3 devotees. He has a BBT ring that they gave him for distributing books for 25 years. So we all met there, and he's doing very nicely, Paramahamsa. And so that was very sweet. So let's see, we still have so much time, huh? So what would you like to hear? I think he's in Colorado. Actually, after they left India, of course, they couldn't get visas for Vietnam. Vietnam government was not interested in giving visas to Americans at that time. So they, from India, they went overland by buses. They were now sannyasi, they had nothing. And they went overland and they went through Afghanistan and they ended up in Iran. And actually they did a lot of preaching in Iran. And Parabhajakacharya, he became the a yoga instructor for the Shah of Iran's daughter. So he was giving her yoga classes. He was actually in the palace giving yoga classes. He was Prabhupada's disciple, sannyasi. And now he, in Colorado, he's become a very famous yoga teacher. So he's presently there. And, yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, I heard that you have asked only two questions to Srila Prabhupada. And then the other pastime when you... That in your whole service time with Srila Prabhupada, you ask only two questions to Srila Prabhupada. And plus the story when Prabhupada woke you up in the morning. When Prabhupada woke you up, you're sleeping and Prabhupada came. Remember that? It's like that one.
I'm not sure. We'll go over the two questions. The first question, that was even before I went to Vrindavan. Radha Damodar. I was only with Prabhupada a few weeks, and that was when he was in Thailand, and I was giving him massage in the hotel room. And my godbrother Burjan was also there. So Prabhupada was talking with him, and I was just massaging Prabhupada's back. Now, remember, Prabhupada was heading back to India, and he said to us, my godbrothers, he said, they criticize me because I allow women into the temple. He said, but when I went to the West, I saw that men and women, they always were together. They traveled together, they lived together, they were working together, that they were always together. He said, I've made that adjustment. He said, and by making that adjustment, he said, we've become successful. He said, so that was a necessary adjustment, he said. He said, but my godbrothers, they simply criticize me that I have allowed women into the temple. He said, but in Mayapur, he said, when they have Gaur Purnima, big festivals, he said, in their temples, he said, who comes to the temples? He said, only women wearing white. He said, but they criticize me for allowing women. He said, but no one even comes. He said, no preaching is going on. And when they have a festival, he said, the temple room is filled with widows wearing white. He said, just women. He said, but me they criticize. So then he stopped. So I'm massaging Prabhupada. And I said, Prabhupada, I said, how do you know what the difference is between making an adjustment and changing a principle? And then I just got quiet. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. Then finally he just shook his head. He said, that requires a little intelligence. But this is how Prabhupada spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Not by pushing women away, by bringing them in. This is his secret of success, was bringing women right up, bringing women right into the temple. He created brahmacharinis. There's no such word, brahmacharini. He created brahmacharinis. And in this way, he spread Krishna consciousness around the world. So this, he said, this was his little intelligence. See, this requires divine inspiration. So this was Prabhupada Krishna's pure devotee. So that was my first question to Prabhupada. Then it was 1975, and Prabhupada had received one letter, and I was again massaging Prabhupada. That's when you always, when you were massaging Prabhupada, everything, Prabhupada didn't just sit there, take massage. Sometimes he would sit there quietly. But other times his secretary would be coming in, reading the mail to him. His Sanskrit editor would come in, and he would be asking him questions about the previous day's translation work. So it was a very busy time. So this one day, massaging Prabhupada, and his secretary is reading him the mail. And he reads this one letter from one Grahastha devotee. And he asks Prabhupada for permission to divorce his wife and to get remarried. So Prabhupada's response was that, yes, it was okay. Well, this was 1975. I was also a Grahastha now, and I had been with Prabhupada for 2 years. So I became surprised when Prabhupada said, yes, that's okay. He said, you can go on. And I didn't say anything at this time. I just couldn't. But I was thinking, how could Prabhupada give him permission to divorce? Because he always spoke against divorce. So all day I just went on, I did my service, I cooked lunch for Prabhupada, and it was just there in my head, and I'm thinking, well, I'm sure Prabhupada had good reason, but I just didn't know what it was, you know. So I didn't say all day, I'm just sitting in my room, and so then in the evening, now this was my time, in the evening I'd be alone with Prabhupada, massaging him, just dry, no oil, just massage his legs, massage his feet and sometimes his back, and Prabhupada would just lie in bed. So my mind was really disturbed, and I'm massaging Prabhupada, and I'm trying to think all the different ways Prabhupada's response to this devotee in this letter. So finally I couldn't stop, and I said, Prabhupada, he just opened his eyes. I said, that devotee sent a letter and he asked for permission to divorce. He said, oh yes, I told him it was okay. I said, yes, I know. I said, you know, I said, I thought that it was not possible, you know, that this was against Vedic rules, you know, to get divorced. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, but in your country, he said, these things are going on. He said, it's very common in your country. And I'm still massaging him. And I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, so is meat eating, intoxication, and illicit sex. I said, they're all going on. I said, but, you know, we don't allow these things. Prabhupada said, yes. So then he got serious. And he just closed his eyes. He said, whether I told him he could divorce or not, he said he was going to divorce this girl and get remarried. He said, so if I say no, he said, then it is a very big offense. So that was Prabhupada. So he said, yes, it's okay. Because it was going to happen. So Prabhupada was so compassionate to his disciples and so merciful that when he knew you were going to do something, he said, yes, very nice. Because he didn't want any offense. So he wouldn't give you some instruction that you couldn't follow. That was Srila Prabhupada's compassion. So that was the only time I ever asked Prabhupada a question. And I knew it. I knew Prabhupada was... But I needed to hear it from him because I just wanted to, you know. But I knew that's what it was. But when he told me, and the way he said it, you could just see Prabhupada's great love for his disciples. He had one sannyasi. This was in Mexico. Prabhupada arrived in Mexico. Also, this was 1975. And he was a young man. He was one of the early sannyasis. He fell down. Now, by the time Prabhupada arrived in Mexico, he was already married, and he had a child, and he named the child Prabhupada Das. He had a son. So now Prabhupada arrived in Mexico, but he didn't even want to go into the room to see Prabhupada. He was so ashamed. He was so embarrassed, you know, had fallen down. And so, of course, as soon as Prabhupada got there, he said, where is he? He asked for him. He wanted to see him. So he came in, and now he's wearing all white and offered obeisances. And Prabhupada smiled, said, how are you? He said, how are you doing? He said, he was so, just felt so much shame, you know. And Prabhupada said, is everything all right? He said, how are you doing? He said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, but Prabhupada, he said, I feel so fallen. And he said, is it okay? He said, can I still do devotional service? Can I still serve you? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, of course you can serve, he said. He said, Lord Chaitanya, he said, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, he went through the forest and he would make even the animals chant and dance. He said, but I'm not Lord Chaitanya. He said, I need all the help I can get. He said, of course you can do service. And then he pointed, he said, Srutakirti, he said, he is a grahasta. He said, so now he said, just serve as a grahasta. He said, there's no difficulty. He said, just do your devotional service. You just chant and be happy. So this is how Prabhupada never rejected anyone. In, it was 1976, right, in New York City. My wife, Amekla, she was living in New York City. And this was a big grand temple on 55th Avenue, a 10-story building. And there was one devotee there. He was actually, we would say he was an ex-devotee. He was fallen. He was also sannyasi. And he became a devotee very young, 17 years old. And he had been a musician. But he surrendered to Prabhupada and he became sannyas. And then he fell away. And he had fallen down very badly. He wasn't following any principles. He was even eating meat. And he was even criticizing Prabhupada. He was saying that because of Prabhupada, now I'm not a successful musician. I could have been a very big success in the music world and made so much money and had so much fame, but I became a devotee, so now that opportunity is gone. So the devotees, they wouldn't even talk to him. He would come because he would eat at the Govinda's restaurant in the New York temple. He would go into the restaurant because he liked prasadam. And he was a very expert cook. Prabhupada taught him how to cook so many things. So he was a very good cook and he liked prasadam. So he would come, but no one would talk to him except for Amekala. She would talk to him because she was a very kind-hearted devotee. So she would, when he would come to the temple, she was working there at the temple, running the temple. So she would speak with him. But others, they would just avoid this very offensive person. Imagine, criticize Prabhupada. So the one day he came there, and by chance, of course there is no chance, but by chance, it was the very time Prabhupada was arriving into New York at the temple. And Amekala, she felt a little in anxiety because Prabhupada was coming and here was this, you know, and she knew he could be offensive, you know. And his car arrived and all the devotees came down and he said, what's going on? And she said, oh, she said, Prabhupada's arriving. He said, oh, okay. So Prabhupada got out of the car and of course everybody's there, you know, all the swamis are there, the temple president, the GBC, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, all these devotees are there. And Prabhupada got out of the car and he immediately looked at him, the devotee. He immediately looked and he went right up to him. Everybody else was there with flower garlands and everything. Prabhupada just went right up to him and he's just there in his Western clothes, you know. And the meanie said, how are you? He said. And he said, oh, I'm okay. He said, so, he said, while I'm in New York, you can cook for me. And Tamal went, Prabhupada, he said, he's eating meat, you know, and he's offensive, he's blaspheming you. Prabhupada said, never mind. He said, anyway, he said, while I'm here, you can cook for me, okay? And he said, yes, Prabhupada. So he stayed there for almost a week, and Amekala and him, they cooked for him every day. So then he lost his offensive attitude. So this was Srila Prabhupada's way to engage everyone in devotional service. Is all he saw was the service that we did. He didn't see our faults. He knew we were full of faults. He was in America for a long time. He knew what our backgrounds were. But these were the devotees that helped Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness around the world. And as I mentioned in that letter, Prabhupada said they were all pure devotees, he said. And they're all going back home, back to Godhead. That was what Prabhupada saw. They were all pure. He said, why just think this one is following, this one is not following? Prabhupada said, we offer respect to all the devotees. When I was in Mayapur, this big festival, this 1975, so the first building was finished, the Lotus building. Prabhupada had his rooms there. And on that floor, they would let all the GBCs, temple presidents, sannyasis, they were all staying around Prabhupada's rooms. And Mayapur was such a special place. And you could hear everything in Mayapur, in that building. Like when the windows would slam and the doors would slam, Prabhupada would get so upset. You could hear it through the whole building. So Prabhupada was in his room, and all the devotees are assembling. They're all coming from America and Europe and South America. So, of course, some of them haven't seen one another for a long time. So they're all sitting in the room and they're talking. So Prabhupada rang his bell. So I went in, offered obeisances. I looked up. He said, tell them to be quiet. He said, "Is all they're doing is talking nonsense. He said, just gossiping. He said, this is very bad. He said, tell them just be quiet and just chant Hare Krishna. He said, all this gossip. He said, gossip, he said, destroys your Krishna consciousness. He said, it destroys it. He didn't say it stops it or prevents you from advance. He said, it destroys Krishna consciousness. He said, tell them to be quiet. I said, yes, Prabhupada. So then I was just young again. I was just this young boy, and I'd go in and all these sannyasis and GBCs. So I couldn't. I said, Prabhupada said, please be quiet. He's trying to rest. I couldn't even say it, what Prabhupada said to me. But he said this in Mayapur. He said this three different times to me. He would always hear it, and he said, tell them to be quiet. All this gossip, he said. He said, they're just wasting their time. He said, they should be reading and chanting. He said, not come here simply to gossip. Prabhupada never liked to hear these topics, talking about this devotee, talking about this, all their faults, all their so much criticism. So then the next day, I go into Prabhupada's room, and he had just seen his godbrother. This was Damodar Maharaj. He was a younger godbrother, and he had a small temple down the road. And after he left, Prabhupada called me in, and he said, next time my godbrother comes, he said, don't let him into the room. He said, I don't want to see him. He said, as all he does is talk nonsense. He said, simply gossip. He didn't say prajalpa, he kept saying gossip. He says he just gossips. He said, and he tells me, in my mat, my disciples, they're doing this thing and that thing. And then he tells me in the other mats, all these different things that are going on all around Mayapur. He said, just gossiping about everyone. He said, I don't want to hear these things. He said, I don't want to hear all these stories. He said, I wouldn't mind if he would come in and he would talk philosophy. We would talk about Krishna, talk about Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur. He said, I would be very happy to receive him every day. He said, but he just talks nonsense and gossips all the time. He said, I don't have time for these things. I said, yes, Prabhupada. So then I left the room. So then Prabhupada had his lunch that day, and after lunch he would take a nap. So Prabhupada's taking his nap, and I'm standing right at the top of the stairs of the first floor where Prabhupada's rooms were. So I look down, and who's walking up the steps? It's Damodar Maharaj. And as soon as he sees me, he says, oh, he said, I'm here to see Prabhupada, Swamiji, you know, I come to see him. Unfortunately, Prabhupada was resting. See, I couldn't even tell my own godbrothers what Prabhupada has said, what to speak of Prabhupada's godbrother. So I said, oh, I said, Prabhupada's resting. I said, when he's resting, I said, no one can disturb him. So he became very defiant. He said, He said, Swamiji said, whenever I want, I can come and see him. I said, yes. I said, I know. I said, but right now he's resting. And I said, our instructions, when Prabhupada's resting, I said, no one can disturb him. So he just looked at me. He was becoming angry. So we're right at the top, right outside Prabhupada's room. So just then, Prabhupada opens his bedroom door. And he'd just gotten up. And Prabhupada is always so effulgent. He was just getting up from his samadhi, his rest with Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and he looked so beautiful. And he just had a dhoti on, and his dhoti was all wrinkled from lying down, and he's fixing it as he gets up. And he just had a bare chest with just tilak marks all over his body. And as soon as he opens the door, he sees his godbrother, and he said, oh, Maharaj. He said, come in. He said, I'll be right there. And he walked to the bathroom, which was down at the end of the hall. So Damodar Maharaj and I, we go into the sitting room and we sit down. And he's being very quiet now because he's angry with me. And we're both sitting there and I'm thinking, oh, Krishna, you know. So Prabhupada, after 1-2 minutes, Prabhupada comes back and he goes and sits behind his desk. And he said, oh, Maharaj, he said, it's very good to see you again, you know. And I'm sitting there, I think, oh, Krishna. And immediately Damodar says, yes, he said, your disciple, he said, he wouldn't let me see you. And Prabhupada looked at me. He said, Shrutakirti, he said, I told you, whenever Maharaj comes, you let him in immediately. I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, okay. He said, you go. So I just offered obeisances and left. So I felt so happy because Prabhupada knew what he had said. He took me into his confidence, but then he chastised me for his godbrother because he would never. He was his godbrother. So even he saw him as just a rascal who was always talking nonsense. Prabhupada gave him his good association to try to encourage him in Krishna conscious ways. So we have to be so Krishna conscious. We have to be expert, understand what it means to be Krishna conscious, how to help one another in Krishna consciousness. So this is what Prabhupada did all 24 hours a day. He was always giving, always encouraging all of his disciples, his god brothers. Even they created so many difficulties for him. If they would come, he would be cordial. So it's 9 o'clock. We have, yeah, he has the microphone. You can get it next then.
Hare Bol Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
We are indebted to Prabhupada life after life. How can we repay him?
He said, how can we repay Srila Prabhupada? You can't. But aside from that, we just have to follow Prabhupada's instructions. That's how you repay the spiritual master, by offering, you give him your life and you follow his instructions. So we were mentioning that Prabhupada, of course, he gave us so many instructions while he was with us. But basically, he would say, you just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But then in Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was preparing to leave, he gave us instructions. As his disciples, he gave them some instructions. What instructions did Prabhupada give? Does anyone know? In those final days, final weeks, he would tell, cooperate with one another. He said, and to at least, he said, maintain what I have given you. He said, to maintain the society. And to cooperate. So the society means people. The society is his devotees. So that's what we have to do, is to maintain, to see that everyone within all of Prabhupada's followers, that we take care of one another very nicely. Doesn't mean just paint buildings. That's not maintaining the society. Buildings have no value unless the devotees are in them, how they're filled. And the buildings are here for people from outside to come in and to become Krishna conscious by your good association. You give them Krishna, you give them darshan, you give them a little philosophy, a little prasadam, so that everyone can become Krishna conscious. So this is to maintain this establishment of devotees that he gave us. And cooperate. What does it mean to cooperate? Who knows? What does it mean? Cooperate. Anyone have a definition? Yes. Yeah, to work together to reach the same goal. So it doesn't mean just someone gives orders and you have to follow them. Huh? Yeah. See, many times when you go to temples and you say you have to cooperate, that's what they say, you have to cooperate with the authorities. But it's not what Prabhupada said, not that someone is an authority and they tell you what to do and you do it. It means we all have to cooperate together. So this was Prabhupada's, again, his expertise was knowing how to engage everyone in service. So cooperate means Prabhupada would listen. When his disciples would come and talk, Prabhupada would sit and listen to them. And then he would converse with them. It wasn't that he sat there waiting, well, when will they be done talking so I can tell them what the proper thing is to do? See, that's not cooperation. You actually have to understand what each individual needs to help them. And you know, those who are also following, they want to see eagerly how they can help. Of course, Prabhupada always said, management means the biggest servant. Not the master, the servant. Like Prabhupada. When I was Prabhupada's servant, sometimes he would ring his bell. And I would go into the room and offer obeisances. And he would look at me. And completely in humility, he would say, can you give me a massage now? And I would become so confused. And I would say, Prabhupada, I'm sitting in this room 24 hours a day waiting to serve you. But he would ask me if I could give him a massage as if I had some other life that I was, you know, I had to make time for him. But see, this is humility. So when one is like that, then when Prabhupada would say that, I would just become just more attached. So this is how, you know, one is a devotee. This is how he thinks. I mean, we're Prabhupada's disciples, and he would ask us. He was founder acharya of the ISKCON, and he would ask people, can you do this? He would say everything is voluntary. So there's no question of forcing. But somehow or other, by your example, by your great love of Krishna, and consequently everyone, people would want to serve you 24 hours a day. That's what Prabhupada instilled. We wanted to serve him 24 hours a day. We couldn't do enough. See, that's how you repay the debt to your spiritual master. But it's not a debt. It's with love. We're eager to do it. I mean, we're obviously indebted to Prabhupada. He's given us eternal life with Krishna. Yeah? Otherwise, we're just struggling outside like everyone, struggling, trying to enjoy. So Prabhupada gives you Krishna. But then he would say, can you do this? Can you do that? And you would just become overwhelmed at Prabhupada's humility as a devotee, as our spiritual master. And he was asking me. And this was regular. When I would go in, he never said, go do this, go do that. It never had that tone of being told what to do. There was always that element like he was requesting. So that was just some of the ways Srila Prabhupada forced us to love him. We couldn't do anything. We just fell in love with Prabhupada. And then you just want to help them in any way you could. So that's good management. And that's cooperation, understanding. We all have. Prabhupada said the free will is there. And he said we should never crush the spirit of any individual in Krishna consciousness. That spirit should always be there to want to endeavor to do something very exciting for Krishna, he said. Each and every one, we should want to do something exciting. So when one is qualified, he can accomplish so much for Krishna. When one's pure and there's no motivation for himself, but just wants to serve his spiritual master. So I think we need to end here. Amekal and I today we're going to Chaupati, and then tomorrow morning we leave back for Bhaktivedanta Manor where we live. And speaking for her and myself, we want to thank everyone so much for your kindness and encouraging us in Krishna consciousness, particularly Raj Bihari Prabhu and Surdas Prabhu and Devaki Nanda Prabhu. And everyone, all the devotees here, it's a very wonderful temple here. And we were very pleasantly surprised to see how nicely everything is going on here. And the new heaven on earth, Prabhupada said, if there's heaven on earth, he said it was in Hawaii. He said, but now you also have heaven on earth here. It's the most beautiful place So now we have to come back. I want to stay in your new guest house and I want to take prasadam in the new restaurant and do seminars in your new rooms there. It's a very beautiful place. So it's easy to see you have all of Radharasa Bihari's blessings here and the blessings of Srila Prabhupada to carry on in so many nice ways and preaching activities that go on here. So Prabhupada's very pleased. And just go on, cooperate together. And if someone isn't cooperating, you have to become expert to help them to cooperate. And cooperate with them. See what they're excited to do for Krishna. We all have a gift somehow or other. Everyone has some gift. And that's the spiritual master. He's very expert in fanning the flame. You know, when you have a flame, we all have that spark. And Prabhupada would turn it into a flame. But you have to know how to fan it. If you fan it too much, it goes out. If you don't fan it enough, it goes out. But each fire is different. It's not that you can fan everyone the same way. You have to know. So to do that, you have to listen. It's not always... Preaching isn't always talking. Sometimes preaching is listening. So then when you listen, then you know how to fan. So Prabhupada, he was, of course, the most expert. So again, thank you. Mekala, would you like to say anything else? She appreciates. She's very shy over there. But thank you so much. And I think we're going to take a picture together, all the devotees, and then take prasadam. Jagannath Prabhu, your wonderful devotees. Hare Krishna.
On behalf of all the Radharasa Bihari temple devotees and the management devotees, I would like to thank you very much for coming and taking out 3 days for this wonderful Prabhupada Katha, which has been a nectar to all of us here. And we beg you that please come again and again so that we can take your association. As Prabhuji was yesterday going and Mataji was going along we were just going to see Heaven on Earth project. So every moment he was appreciating that this is very, very beautiful. This is very nice. And the rooms are fantastic. The restaurant is fantastic. You know, other auditorium is fantastic. So every corner of this place he was appreciating. And we all appreciate what you have given 3 days to us continuously. and we'll cherish it all the time. We'll keep remembering these anecdotes which have been part of your life, but you have made these anecdotes part of our life too. Though we have been reading in books, but today we are sharing because it's personalized today. Every anecdote which happened to your life with Prabhupada, you have personalized with so many people. And for that, we are very indebted to you. And I'm sure we are not such, flames which can kindle the fire within you, but I'm sure you have kindled the fire of devotion by these anecdotes in our life. And we thank you very much. Lord Shri Shri Radha Rasa Bihari, make you more and more stronger, Mataji, more and more stronger, so that you can travel to other parts of the world and share these anecdotes with empty number of devotees, so that they can also be Krishnaized and they can be also made Prabhupadaized. You see, you have to make them all Prabhupadaized, so that they can always be connected and remain fixed in the devotion of Prabhupada and their lordships. Thank you very much. His grace, Shruti Kriti Prabhu ki, Mekhla Mataji ki. So those of you who would like to join for a photograph here at the backside of Srila Prabhupada, so you can come and so that we can have a photograph with him.